morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team at Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977, or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I would like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you?
Windy,
yes.
Tired of it.
Yeah, dust and wind. And, man, I tell you what, we really lucked out last this week. We had a broker's open on Tuesday, and we had that up in Fountain Hills there above Costco in a new development where we're representing Builder up there and Septon Homes up there. It was gorgeous. Perfectly fantastic day. Lucked out, and then I felt so bad because there were some brokers that had another grand opening on Wednesday, and you couldn't get me into a subdivision with sand and stuff on Wednesday. So, yeah.
We put out an APB for spring.
Okay.
Let you know when we find
it. Well, it tricked us a couple weeks ago, coming there a little early, and then brought us back to reality. As always, we've got with us Mr. Tom Coyne from Sterling Bank here in the studio. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing very great this Saturday morning. Thanks, Lance.
Okay, good to be back. I was out a little bit last weekend, but great to be back because the market is just really, John's looking for the spring weather, but the market says it's here.
It is here. It is busy.
So that's great. Well, we always like to start off with our national real estate news story, and I couldn't resist for Mr. John McKay here. In the industry, this is the one and only Casey Kasem has put his house on the market, very similar to yours, McKay, for $42 million.
I got rid of one just the other day.
Okay, good, good. So he is just a crazy, crazy house. It's kind of one of those original, big California, Beverly Hills Estates type house. Eight-bedroom home.
42.
Yeah, eight-bedroom home. And he bought it in 1989. A huge gated estate originally built in 1954, the pictures are incredible. It is incredible.
That's a lot of Scooby snacks.
Tennis court. It's got a custom-built heart-shaped pool in it, and so it just goes on and on. Two and a half acres in that area of town is part of the reason there's a lot of value there. So definitely very, very interesting to see that 12,000 square foot estate. Now, if they were to finance that $42 million, you'd be looking by the mortgage calculator here at an estimated monthly payment of
$148,000. Wow. Reasonable. Is that on a 15-year?
That was a 20% down on a 30-year fix.
Wow.
Just so that we're following our guidelines for disclosure. So that is our national crazy real estate story. Those radio DJs always making all the money.
Sure. he made most of his money. He made a lot of his money doing the
Shaggy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that really made him famous. And so Shaggy, and then up until recently, until Seacrest took over doing the American Top 40. Mm-hmm. So very, very interesting story there for sure. Now, to our local real estate news, I tell you what, it's all about the market numbers. So, on the local real estate news, first quarter numbers are in. All the official tabulations have been done by the Tri-City Association of Realtors and released. And so, it was just what we thought. We had been reporting the last couple months that we felt like it was a barn burner. You know, when you're in it, you don't always know exactly if it's just your office or your team. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like it was an indication of the market overall, and it definitely was. So first quarter ended, 633 units sold here in the Tri-Cities. Now, versus last year, 2012 first quarter, that number was only 570. Mm. So up about 63 total units in the first quarter. Back even until 2011, it was 574. So it has not been that good as far as number of units sold since we had the tax credits in early 2010 was the last time we saw those. March really kind of brought that home. That number in March was 258 units sold versus last March at 241 versus March of 2011 at 243. So really, really strong March. And what will be very, very interesting for next month as kind of a forecasting number we use is the number of sold and under contracts in the month of March. That was up almost 100 units over February. 407 is the number that we're looking at there. Just for comparison, last year that number was only 340. 2011, that number was only 312. We haven't seen an under contract month that strong since April of 2010, which was the last chance for people to utilize tax credits. And so very, very strong numbers. We, you know, we talked about, we laugh about the wind and stuff, but we talked about kind of the mild weather coupled with those crazy low interest rates still happening. And so all of that drove a very quick start to the spring market. You might not have known that by some of the negative news we saw come out of Hanford and sequestration and that type of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. But as far as those numbers are looking, coming out of our association, very strong. Now, that's based on 1,243 active listings, 1,243 on the market right now. So that number is kind of climbing a little bit. We always expect it to climb generally as we come into our spring market, more inventory comes. We expect to see that number hover around 1,300 to 1,400. Last month, it was only 1179. One of the things we like to watch out for is seller's market, buyer's market, or balanced. We take the number of active listings divided by the number selling each month. So 1243 divided by the 258, that gives us about, if no more houses came on the market, a five-month supply of homes. Now, we've on the show always kind of used the barometer that six-month supply of homes is a balanced market. That's almost neither a buyer's market nor a seller's market. Looks like it's tipped the scales a little bit towards seller, but five is getting very close to that number. We are sticking around what seems to be a very balanced market, and the sales numbers are reflecting that.
And that's good.
So very, very good. And that's why we've been busy and kind of knocking things out. So Tom and I, we wanted to do something a little bit fun. And I'm sure we all have some stories. And one of the things we wanted to do is look back over first quarter, look at kind of where some hiccups happened, where some problems happened, and then why that was, to try to kind of help the listeners and people avoid that and look at what they were going through. And so kind of write down some tips and just go into some things. Here's what happens, and here's what we do to kind of solve that and combat that problem. So I think we can probably switch back and forth a little bit today if that format works good for you, Tom.
Yeah, it works for me.
So the first thing that I had written down on my list, and we had done our list separate, so I'm hoping maybe some of our stuff will cross over, but we'll just check them off the list as we go. The first thing that we wrote down that happens sometimes, and, you know, as agents, sometimes you forget to maybe warn your clients about this, or you think people might have this lined up or handled, but checking with them to remind them, is the first thing I wrote down was not adequately preparing your time to move. Not having enough time to move. You're laughing, Vicky, because you know it's a monumental process. I mean, especially if you've been in a home for 20 years and you think, oh gosh, yeah, I'm going to move. You know, it's a 30-day close. You know, in 2 weeks, I'll kind of start getting boxes and stuff rounded up. Well, in 2 weeks, then you only got 2 weeks left. And if you're just getting boxes at the 2 week mark and haven't even put together a plan for packing up, it can really become overwhelming quickly. Mm-hmm. And we have contractual close dates that we generally have to meet. And then sometimes it's not just getting packed up and then moved out, but then along the way, based upon inspections or requests, you're going to also have to potentially be dealing with making those repairs, scheduling those, and then afterwards cleaning the home. because a lot of times it's amazing. A home will look clean when it has furniture and everything in it, and then you empty it out and start to see traffic patterns and carpets that need to be cleaned. Mm-hmm. And so not giving yourself adequate time to get that part of the process done can be a huge deal. And one of the things that can really derail a transaction towards the end is if you have an empty home like that that is really dirty and there's trash everywhere, and a buyer comes by just to check or show their family member because they're excited about moving in 3 days, and they see a house that is not even close to being ready for closing, it can really cause a lot of extra problems and issues that could be avoided with a little more planning. So that was my number one that I wrote down from first quarter that had popped up a couple different times. Tom, I'm sure you've got a number one on your list.
You know I do, but I just kind of want to start by like just talking about why I thought this show was important, and it's something that a lot of people don't want to hear about. They usually want to hear about all the cool programs that we have out
there. Yeah, and all the successful closings we have.
Exactly.
No problem.
But there are problems and challenges that arise on almost every transaction. So everyone knows that the mortgage industry has been through a whirlwind over the last several years, and what that has led to is really tightened down rules and regulations. So it makes it a little more tough to get a mortgage than it used to. Now, most people will agree that's a good thing, and that might help prevent what we're going through over the last few years to happen again, except the people that are coming in to get a loan, and it's now tougher for them to get a mortgage, and they don't understand why. So I don't want people to think it's impossible to get a mortgage, because it's certainly not the case, but it's important to understand that the days of the handshake approval, they're over.
Right. Right.
Anything you put on paper, you will have to prove. Basically. So I want to chat about, some of our most common challenges we run into. And I want to first start by just giving a statistic I heard about underwriters a couple of years back. 80% of underwriters are either single mothers or the primary breadwinners in their family. Now, this is really important to know, because if an underwriter skips over something that maybe they should have documented on a file more, and they miss something, they approve a loan, the loan closes, and then a year down the road, the client forecloses on the home, and they default on the mortgage. The investor is going to go back to the underwriter and say, what was missed? How could we have prevented this? Did you miss something? And that underwriter's job is now in jeopardy. So no underwriter out there will ever, skip over something without going the extra mile to make sure they're documenting and proving everything.
Well, that's a great point. So let's come to the point, where 80% of underwriters, primary breadwinner in their family, and so their job is on the line. If they're missing the things that eventually led to the housing meltdown, now they've cracked down on them. If they're missing those items, it comes back to them and their job performance. And they're going to make sure they don't miss it so they keep their job.
Absolutely. So it's not ever a personal attack on a client if they come back and ask for more documentation. Just know that if you want the loan, you got to get it.
Wow, I've never had it explained that way. That's a great explanation of kind of how the pressure has come back down through the industry.
Yeah. So the first challenge we have really is when sometimes it's getting the required documentation we need to process a loan. So the hardest loans that we have revolve around people that are reluctant to give us the items we request from the start. So I'll give the client a list of items that we need that I know we'll need based off the loan application, and then they'll bring me what they think I should need. And these transactions turn out to be the most challenging for my office and for the clients. So some people might find it intrusive to get tax returns and bank statements and pay stubs. And then based off of those documents, it can create additional items we need to document. So if there are large deposits on a bank statement, for example, or maybe there's a loss of a business that was undisclosed on the tax returns, then we'll need to account for that. But people trying to get a loan should really go into it knowing that they're going to have to bring a lot of documentation into us in order to get approved. And we'll never ask for anything that we don't need. So the smoothest transactions are always those in which the clients give us exactly what we need right from the start. Everyone leaves those transactions happy. So, the first challenge is whatever the loan officer asks for, they're generally going to need it. And the easiest way to get through it is just to provide those items.
No, that makes a lot of sense. We get that. We deal with that a lot on my end on the real estate side because, a client will go to you, get a pre-approval, be documenting stuff, and then we'll find them the house, write the contract, and then they're back over working with your office. And a lot of times we take those calls for you because the client will then say, hey, Lance, that crazy guy Tom at the bank, he wants to see the third page of my bank statement, but the third page is just a blank page, but he says he has to have it. And I'm like, oh, well, he's not crazy. And they're like, oh, I thought he was. and so I'm like, no, because when the statement says page 3 of 3, even though the last page is blank, they want to make sure it truly is blank. I probably get that call once a month, and so I send them back to your office with the blank third page.
You know, Lance, funny, when I was preparing for the show yesterday in the office, I walked around and asked every loan officer, biggest challenge you have, what is it? And every single one of them said, bank statements.
Bank statements, yeah.
So
and a lot of people do e-statements now, so it's a little more work to go back in, and they don't do paper statements, and go back in, request those statements, or print them out. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, if people want to make the transaction a little smoother for themselves, in the months leading up to getting a mortgage, don't have any out of the ordinary deposits going in or anything that looks suspicious that maybe isn't a standard payroll deposit. When we start a loan, we're going to get 2 months bank statement. So anything before that, we're not concerned about what happened. But anything out of the ordinary, we're going to have to document it. And like Lance said, we need all pages. It says page 104. Got to give us 4 pages.
Fantastic. Well, we have each gotten through our first point, and I brought 8, and we're up against our first hard break. So I know how these type of shows go, and that is too much material for our time. When we come back, we will try to knock out at least a few more of our top problems in the first quarter, how we've dealt with them, and what you can do to prepare for your real estate transaction.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been kind of doing a little first quarter review here today, looking at problems and things that we run into in a transaction, things that might have happened in first quarter that we see keep happening, come up again, or people are sometimes blindsided or surprised about. We thought it'd make a great topic to talk about those items, how we deal with those items, mm-hmm. and can get through it, and so hopefully make a better, smoother transaction. Once we've seen so many transactions over the years, a lot of times we're prepared for these situations and can better advise our clients to handle that. And that's exactly what brought me to point number 2, and one of the talks that I have with my clients a lot of the times. And point number 2 that I wrote down is a small problems that can come up and how we deal with them is one of the problems that comes up is underestimating what type of emotional process moving can be.
Let alone cleaning the shed.
Let alone taking your weekend to clean the shed. When you tackle a project like this, moving actually, I looked up before the show a little research. It makes the top of the list of life stress events. So when you look at that list, it goes like death of spouse, loss of a loved one,
family members,
job loss, and then not too far down on that list is foreclosures, actually obtaining a new mortgage. I thought was interesting on the list. I thought moving would be
certainly not
that.
My client's plan. So
not your client, but the money stress. Taking on an obligation like that is one of those.
And even good stress like a new job,
exactly.
Mortgage.
And moving was on that list, and so a lot of times people underestimate that. Humans are really creatures of habit. We all like, the same type of meals. We like to drive our same car every day. When you take somebody out of that routine,
out of their comfort zone,
it really can mess things up. And so it causes a lot of stress. So one of the things I always tell people, and when I list somebody's home for sale and we talk about it and kind of explain the process to them, I always just kind of say up front, I say, okay, now as I leave tonight, I just want to warn you, between now in closing, there is going to be a point which I call just the emotional breakdown. There's going to be something that just sets you off over the edge. And so when that happens, let us know. That's our job, is to help manage through that. But that's going to happen. Let us know when it happens, and then we can take care of it. And so I always love that, like, the third week or something, I'll get a call from a husband or a wife, and they'll be like, "Hey, Lance, you know how you warned me about that emotional breakdown moment? That was yesterday when we realized we're moving in a week and a half and we haven't scheduled the carpet cleaner, or we need to schedule these four things." And so that's great, because then we know to expect that. They communicate that to us, and then we can say, "Okay, jump in. Here's our service providers. Here's our guys that will respond in a week." And, you know, jump in and help manage that process. So just a lot of times, just knowing that that's what you're going to be in for can really help things out and increase the communication. Mm-hmm. And so we try to, knowing that it's always much better to approach it. I love getting that call, because then I know now's when we really need to help. So that was my number two on the list there. And Tom, I know you've got a couple more over there.
Yeah, I do. On the lending side, you know, one thing that I ran into here recently is at closing, we always refresh the credit report. And so we have to make sure there's no new accounts, no new debts, or anything that's been opened. And if there's an inquiry on there, we're going to go find out what is that inquiry from.
Yeah, but Tom, I mean, I'm getting a new house. I wanted to, ahead of time, have the refrigerator and furniture all lined up so that it could be delivered.
It makes sense, Lance. It really does. But it could cause two problems. One, let's say that this new account that you opened doesn't affect your approval. You're still approved. Everything's fine. All it's going to do is slow us down. And going back to what we talked about before the break, there's more documentation you now have to bring me.
Right, because now I've increased my debt load and it's changed my ratio.
Yep, and we got to account for that new account. We got to know what the payment is, the balance, everything.
And so that delivery date I was so excited about, we're going to have to move it anyway.
Yeah, so you might as well just wait to get
wait
that
till it closes. Wait till you have the keys and the deed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, another thing a new account could hurt, potentially, this is worst case scenario, is you open that new account of that brand new truck that you had to have, and now you don't qualify for this loan. And we are 3 days from closing. What do we do? And so, fortunately, we're usually able to work through these scenarios and find ways to make things happen. But it's a real concern that we do have. And I always tell people when I sit down with them up front, don't open any new accounts.
Good. That's great. That's great advice. And we always say get the garage first and the car second.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Okay. Very, very good. Those are great, great points. I wrote down number three for when people move and pack up, especially when you're moving out of town or, you know, three or four states away. One of the little things that comes up is taking things with you that belong to the house. I'm talking about mailbox keys. I'm talking about garage door openers, manuals for your appliances. Many times if someone has packed up and moved to six states away, we come to closing and the buyer's like, "Great, I would love to get into mailbox number seven. Where's that key?" And if that is packed up in the bottom of a box in storage because they're still in an apartment in Vermont, it's going to be pretty hard for me to get those keys. And so one of the things is having set aside a drawer, especially when professional movers are involved, we love to, it's kind of our standard of practice, the easiest way to do it, we always try to get in the drawer in the kitchen closest to the stove as possible. And so it's always kind of the same for us. So we're always telling our clients the drawer closest to the stove. Put tape, blue tape across the front of it. Do not pack. Do not move. And then all manuals, keys, openers, items that go with the appliances in a drawer like that helps so much when it comes closer to the closing time. So that's another big one on my side. Back to you, Tom.
All right. Warranty papers.
Yes, thank you.
All right, the other thing we run into is issues with appraisals and inspections. So let's say an inspection, which I think are extremely important. Everyone should get one. But sometimes they do cause issues. And let's say the inspector goes out there, finds something the person didn't expect. Then it's back to the drawing board with Lance and his team to find out what's the seller willing to do. Are they willing to address these items and fix it? What are must fixes? What are not necessarily have to get fixed right now? Sometimes it can hurt a deal, and sometimes it's just informative for the client.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that happens for us in the first 10 days, you know, after having a contract is that inspection process. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes on there, contractors, second opinions, bids, adjustments. So that is a big one for sure. And so that's one that really takes a team effort to negotiate through.
It is. And you know, appraisal comes in right after that. And some people don't realize the difference between an inspection and an appraisal. I usually explain it like the inspector is the guy who's going to get on his hands and knees. He's going to look under the sink and check the plumbing. He's going to go up in the attic and make sure everything's there. And the appraisal is what tells us what the home is worth. We need to make sure it's worth what we're lending on it. But for the client, they want to know it's worth what we're paying for it. So the appraisal is very important. Sometimes an appraisal will come in low, and then again, it's back to the drawing board on the offer. A lot of times it comes in at value because the agents in this area are usually really good about marketing it at the right price. Sometimes an appraiser will have requirements of things that need to get fixed prior to the home being sold. So it's just another challenge or obstacle that we can come up against, and we're usually able to work through it.
Fantastic. Another thing that I wrote down is kind of an evolving generational and cultural thing that a lot of people don't realize. And so one of the mistakes that I put down that happens that we're counseling people with a lot is being slow to respond to a request when somebody is expecting an answer right now. We're in a generational gap where people are now, they have smartphones, they have email, they have texting. Everything is instantaneous. Now, granted, this is a big decision. You're selling your house. So what happens is when we have generationally somebody that's done business traditionally, pen, paper, meeting the next day at the office, that is generally a house they're selling because now they're either upsizing or going to a bigger house or downsizing, and they're selling it to a generation of somebody that is computer, software, engineer, now, 20 minutes, signed everything digitally, presented an offer, and then we're taking 2 days to get back to them. And for us, that might seem exactly normal. But knowing who your buyer is, knowing what they're expecting, when you've placed that house on the market, if you have predetermined a level, and you don't have to tell your agent, I'm not saying let the cat out of the bag and tell everybody everything, but if you have a game plan ahead of time that says, okay, if you've placed some scenarios out in your mind ahead of time, okay, here's where we're at. If we got an offer for this, what would we do? And play a couple of those scenarios, you know, if it's a husband, wife, two decision makers, whatever the case may be, play a couple of those scenarios out in your mind so you already have an idea of where you would go. Because when those responses come back faster with a generation that is used to expecting faster responses, those deals, even if the prices are far apart or the negotiations take a little bit longer, when the response time is faster, those deals on a higher percentage basis go together faster, as opposed to moving on to something else. So even if you think your response is not in the price point, sometimes the speed of that response can greatly increase things. So that was one that was just kind of one of those ones people don't think about a lot of times, but we're seeing it more out there and kind of having to be the bridge to connect those buyers and sellers. That's what we do. I mean, if it wasn't for that, then I wouldn't have a job. So having that bridge between those people, that was a big one. And then I had written down, kind of as I wrap up here, as my last one, another thing is not properly documenting repairs. A lot of times people have a friend or a neighbor or a buddy that does that at Hanford so he can just come over tonight and for three beers and a slice of pizza, he can do it better than a contractor would. Mm-hmm. Well, that is excellent, and it might be just as good as the contractor or better, but we don't have a receipt now that we can turn in to the underwriters at the bank that we can give to the buyer to make sure that that was done and then also share some of that liability with a licensed bonded contractor. So not properly documenting repairs is a huge one that we run into. It costs a little more up front for the home seller, but it also gives that buyer kind of that ease of mind that that's been taken care of and gives a paper trail to prove that you did that. And so that's another huge one. As I wrapped up my list, Tom, do you have anything else over there on your list?
Yeah, I got a couple quick things, and a lot of this just applies to the realtors that are the listeners out there, but this happens with new construction. Sometimes there's upgrades or additions to a property when a house is getting built, and we don't receive sales price changes when they happen. That really...
Oh, that's a big one. I can't believe that wasn't on my list.
It's a big deal. Now, Lance has a transaction coordinator who's great about making sure these sort of things don't happen. But we run into it where we don't know there's been changes to the sales price. We ordered an appraisal, and now we have a low appraisal.
Right. They put in that extra $5,000 worth of tile. That wasn't on the original sale agreement. So the appraiser appraises the house at $230 instead of $235 because he didn't know about it.
Yep, exactly. So that's definitely a challenge we run into. So if you are building a house, you know there's a sales price change. Maybe your agent got busy. Good chances they're gonna make sure it gets over to the lender. But if you want to do your due diligence, just go ahead and get all those addendums over to your lender as well. So I just want to end in saying that, you know, when we're doing a loan, we're on our client's team. So I really stress open the communication up with your lender. Make sure your loan officer knows exactly what's going on. They'll walk you through the entire process, and I'd be happy to help you with that and guide you through this, make it as painless as possible.
Fantastic. And what's the contact info to get to you at Sterling Bank, Tom?
They can call me at 430-1305 or on my website at tomcloynehomeloans.com.
All right, fantastic. And as always, you can get us at kenmoreteam.com, and we're looking forward to being right back here next weekend
on News Talk 870.